there. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Anna David. I'm so glad that you're listening. If you're new to the show, this is where I talk to people about their struggles, their success, how they have found, how they've hustled their light out of the dark. And I want you to know that this particular interview, I arranged with somebody not knowing anything about his personal life at all. So the fact that we got into some heavy-duty struggles from minute one was a great revelation to me. So I'm hearing it at the same time you are. Let me tell you about this guy. He's somebody I've long admired. I'm one of those people who fangirls over big marketing people, and he's considered like one of the leading, if not the leading SEO expert. He's published 3 books about SEO. You know, the ones that are studied in school, the classics. And he founded the SEO agency Net Concepts, which is now part of a multi-billion dollar ad agency. He hosts 2 podcasts himself, which is how I discovered him. One is called Get Yourself Optimized. One is called Marketing Speak. You are going to hear about how you can come from really nothing and build this empire, and how you can find that coming from nothing is actually your greatest strength. So without further ado, I am giving you Stefan Spencer. Forget that I said Stefan, Stefan Spencer.
Okay, so we are chatting away. As you know, when I met you, I was not just a fan, but I had implemented something on my website specifically because I heard you talk about doing it, and that is the timeline. And it's funny to kind of get a little like starstruck by these, like, by marketing heroes. It's a bit embarrassing. I live in Hollywood. As you know, I don't care about, like, you know, meeting Brad Pitt. I care a little bit about that, but anyway, and it was so great to realize you're a part of the Genius Network community. So let's talk. I was reviewing your own timeline. And when we talk about a timeline, anybody who has not seen one, it's images. It's rather than one of those long bios, it really walks you through the journey of the person. So let's talk about your journey. You allude in this timeline to being a nerdy kid. So let's talk about that. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in a ghetto, and I'm not being hyperbolic about that. It was an actual ghetto. I as a little kid, I made the mistake of going around the block once, and I was almost abducted. I ran away. So the guy tried to get me in his car, but I ran. I was raised by my grandparents, my grandmother and grandfather, until my grandmother died, and I ended up in a foster home by the end of my childhood. But this was all a huge gift. In retrospect, it was challenging. I bounced around from place to place when I was a kid. Went to live with my grandparents. Went to live with my aunt. Back then, she moved. To another city with her, then back to Toledo to live with my grandfather, and then to my mother's, and then back to my grandfather, back and forth, then to foster care. It was an interesting ride. But the idea here is that when you are given adversity, you can either turn that into something amazing, or you can let it just crush you, be a victim of it. So I chose to do something with it. So when I lived with my mother, she was mentally ill. She worked third shift. So I'd be spending all my nights by myself as a kid. Not great to be in a house by yourself all night long every night. But what I would do is in the summers that I lived with her, which is just like maybe 2 years, I would code all night as a kid. I taught myself how to program, not just in BASIC, but also assembly language. I was coding in hexadecimal, a super geeky little kid. And I wrote my own bulletin board system, a BBS back in the day before there was the internet and the World Wide Web and everything. There was CompuServe, and there was BBSs that you would have to dial into. And so I ran a BBS from my home phone line which really ticked my mother off. She'd pick up the phone and then she'd hear a modem sound and she'd scream up the stairs to get the modem off of the phone so she could make a phone call. So I saw this as an opportunity. I had so much freedom when I lived with her. I could just go, in retrospect, it's crazy to think about like all these things that I would never allow my kids to have done at that age. But I would hang out with guys that were 10 years older than me. Mm-hmm. As like a 12-year-old, I would go hang out with 23, 24-year-olds who were trading software and stuff on Commodore 64 software and everything. I could have gotten like abducted, kidnapped, whatever. I could have like gotten molested, like all sorts of really bad stuff could have happened. Thankfully it didn't, but that experience of having so much freedom and ability to create my own destiny and build stuff. And that started a whole trajectory for me. Like as a 17-year-old, I managed to scrounge, like I bought a car for $65 that ran, and I figured out how to go to a junkyard and get an alternator from another car, the same make and model, and replace it myself. So I replaced my own alternator with a junkyard alternator, and it worked. And the car was a $65 car. Like, that's how I got around in the world. Is I just hacked the system. And so I got married at 19 years old. I started building websites in 1994. I dropped out of a PhD program in biochemistry to start an agency without ever having any business experience or any kind of business classes or marketing classes or anything. I just kind of winged it. I'm like, I'm going to figure this stuff out. And I can thank my grandparents and my upbringing that was pretty difficult as setting me up for that kind of success. So that struggle was a huge gift. You know, my wife, Orion, likes to say, sometimes you get a gift and the bow's on the bottom.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Well, and to be clear, I didn't know any of this. Like, this was just, I was like, you know, had no idea what your struggles were. So this was all in Ohio, or were you moving all around that entire time?
All around. A lot of it was in Ohio, but I spent a year with my aunt in Florida, a year in Connecticut. I would spend summers, some years with family friends in Chicago, friends of my aunt. Like, I was bounced around so much. It's hard. It's really hard. It's like when you're familiar with ACE, adverse childhood experiences. Yes, you get a score, and every time you have like major turmoil in your life, let's say you have to move cities or whatever, I'm sure my ACE score is off the chart. I don't see any benefit in adding all those numbers up.
Right.
But I just know that it was tough, but I got through it and I am super resilient now. In fact, this was a huge kind of epiphany, moment of clarity for me when I realized I'm not only resilient, I'm anti-fragile, because there's this book called Anti-Fragile by Nicholas Taleb, and he talks about economies and immune systems and Mother Nature being anti-fragile, meaning that they actually get stronger because of the stressors in the system, right? It's not like if your immune system was only resilient, you'd be dead.
Right.
If the economy was merely resilient, we would be in, like our economies would be in shambles. But they're anti-fragile. They actually get stronger. They need those stressors in order to really blossom. And that's how I see myself now, as anti-fragile, not merely resilient. And I think that's a game changer for a lot of folks.
Now, what do you think it is in you that caused you to be like that? It was other people, you know, as we're talking about, would have had those experiences and would have, you know, gotten addicted, killed themselves, God knows what. What, so do you think you were just born with that resilience or that anti-fragility?
I don't know. It's a hard question to answer, but what I can say is there were some moments of clarity that I was given as a young child that gave me a perspective. You know, there's this expression that goes something like, I don't know who discovered water, but it certainly wasn't a fish. You're immersed in a dysfunctional environment and you don't see it. You don't see the mental illness. You don't see the abuse. It's just the new normal or the old normal that you were never not accustomed to. The gift that I got very early on, I was a young child, and I remember opening a drawer in the upstairs of my grandparents' house and seeing a huge pile, like the whole drawer was full of soap slivers. Like soap slivers, like little bits of soap that are left over from when you use the bar up and there's hardly anything left. They kept those. And that was a pivotal moment for me. Mm. I looked at that drawer full of soap slivers as a little kid and I said, wow, to myself, wow, they're crazy. They're crazy. So that gave me this new perspective, like, okay, I'm not the fish in the water. I'm looking outside of it, seeing the insanity, and this doesn't compute. And that freed me from getting sucked in. Like, my grandmother was trying to convert me to Jehovah's Witness. She'd read me Watchtowers and Awakes instead of reading me children's books and stuff. It was like I was in the Matrix and suddenly I had the red pill.
Right. Wow. Yeah. Those moments in childhood that we look back on now, where really we just go, wait a minute, this actually isn't right. I'm not the crazy one. I may be 6 years old or whatever, but I have those too. Did you have siblings?
No, only child.
Only child. And when you escaped this environment, is it something, are you in touch with anybody from your past? Is that something? Did you make a conscious decision not to be? Where are you with that?
Yeah, so I took to heart one thing. There's plenty of things I learned from Tony Robbins. I had some really life-changing epiphanies from going through a lot of his programs. But one thing that he taught that I think is relevant here is you don't want to necessarily write off your family, but you want to spend time with the people that you want to become more like, right? So that time and attention is very valuable, and you're the average of the five people that you hang out with the most. So if you want to become a better person, hang out with higher quality people, love your family, but choose your peer group. So that's the bottom line of this lesson from Tony Robbins, is to love your family. Don't necessarily got to write them off or whatever. Sometimes you do, but if you love them and you don't spend, that doesn't mean you have to spend lots and lots of time with them, but love them and then choose your peer group, because they are not your peer group. They're not the people that you want to become more like.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is no offense to anybody with wonderful parents and childhoods, but I will say the longer I'm alive, the more I observe that the truly successful and striving people I know did not come from those loving and perfect supportive families. Just my casual observation, not a scientist. Now, so in terms of financial success or success in the eyes of the world, was that happening right away?
It came pretty early. I was struggling for quite a while in college because I had young children. I was married very young, 19, first child at 20, another child 17 months after that. And I had a stepdaughter as well. So as a college student, and my wife at the time was also going through graduate school, it was pretty challenging in terms of financially. Like, we were on food stamps and WIC and stuff at the time. And I was up to my eyeballs in student loan debt just to pay the bills while we were both in school. And I was going to University of Michigan as an out-of-state student. So that's like, you might as well be paying for Ivy League tuition because it's crazy expensive. It's a very, very good school.
Yeah.
But I was just over the border in Toledo. So that made all the difference, an extra, whatever, $15,000 a year for 4 years because of that, you know, 5 mile difference. But I really enjoyed going to college and getting the degree, which I don't use for anything. Cellular and molecular biology.
Yeah, okay.
Cellular and molecular biology. Then I went to graduate school in at University of Wisconsin-Madison for biochemistry after that. But for undergrad, I was like dirt poor, like broke, living off of student loans and all that. And then 2 years into my graduate studies at University of Wisconsin-Madison, I had built some websites for fun on the side and so forth. I decided to quit school. Now, it wasn't, I was kind of pushed to the precipice. It wasn't just like, you know what, I see this great opportunity. I'm going to just go for it. And that's usually the positioning that you'll hear, like, you know, success upon success upon success. Well, you know, I'm pretty transparent with this sort of stuff that it's not all, you know, easy peasy. I had a run-in with my advisor where he said, look, you got to show up longer at the lab. I see you leaving at 5, 6 o'clock at night, and your colleagues are staying till 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night. You know, you don't have your priorities straight. Like, this is not important enough to you. You're either going to start showing up like everybody else, or you're going to find yourself another lab, which means start all over again. New research, new advisor, being kicked out of a lab, it'll be really hard. I'd lose a year easily. Wow. So I could choose to do that, or I could choose to wrap things up, take 3 months to finish, get a master's, and do something different. And at that same time, I had this opportunity to start a business and to get into internet marketing. It was 1994. And I had just been to the second International World Wide Web Conference. Tim Berners-Lee, the inventor of the World Wide Web, was the keynote speaker. I got to talk to him for a minute or two after his talk. I met Rob McCool, who probably none of your listeners will know who the heck that is. I didn't know who it was either. But Mark Andreessen was the guy who started Netscape with Jim Clark. Well, Rob McCool was the guy that they hired to create Netscape server. He was the creator of NCSA HTTP server. And he's also the creator of Apache web server software, which runs most of the web servers of the internet. Mm-hmm. He created that. And I met him and we talked, and I had never heard of Netscape. It was 1994. Everybody was still using Mosaic browser. And I'm starstruck. I'm like, oh my goodness, there's Netscape. There's this guy who just was plucked out of the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and now is part of this massive startup that's going to like change the world. And I was starstruck. So within 4 or 5 months, I dropped out of the PhD. I did the master's thing. I finished that up. And then I started a business. And the funny thing about you know, how I was able to start the business and get my first clients, it was really tough at the beginning. I was charging like next to nothing to get really terrible clients, building websites and stuff for them. And I couldn't even afford to run that business. So I had to have a part-time job. So I took a part-time job at the university, and then I had my big break. But it wasn't an easy break. It was a very embarrassing one. I'm just going on and on and on. So I don't.
Embarrassing break. Don't you dare stop. Go on.
Okay. So I talked my way into a conference called the How to Market on the Internet conference that was put on by IQPC, which is a big conference organization. It's a $2,000 conference back in 1995, and it was impossible for me to even dream of going there and attending, spending $2,000 to attend. I didn't have it. So I talked my way in as a volunteer. So I'm volunteering, and they give me the job of a mic runner. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a really cheeky 23, 24-year-old. So I'm running around with the mic, and I'm listening to these panelists and speakers who are not that smart, not that skilled in my young in my perspective at that time. I decide I'm just going to jump in and add my 2 cents because I have the mic, right? I'm the mic runner. And so I'm upstaging some really pretty famous people like GM O'Connell, the founder of Modem Media, big agency back in the day. And by the end of that first day of the event, I had a big stack of business cards. People had come up to me afterwards and said, "You know more than the panelists and stuff. I'm really impressed with you. I want to hire you." Because I had like no clients. I had so little revenue. It was just like I could buy a candy bars with it, sort of thing. And by the end of it, that first day, I had out of that stack of business cards, two companies that became my kind of foundational clients that added up to $1 million of lifetime customer lifetime value. And I was also de-invited from attending and participating in the second day by the conference organizer. Apparently, it was not cool that I was upstaging the big name speakers. So that was kind of devastating. I was not expecting to be de-invited from day two, but I'm so glad that I took that liberty and just put myself out there in that kind of way, even though it wasn't socially appropriate. I didn't have to get funding. I didn't have to take on angel investors. I didn't have to like struggle at a part-time job until I finally had my big break. That was my big break. It was incredible. And irony of all ironies, that same conference organization contacted me not even 3 months later, invited me to speak. It was how to market educational programs on the internet. And I was the chairperson. I was a speaker. I had a general session during the main conference, and I had a post-conference workshop. And that started my speaking career. And I was terrible. I was the worst speaker, terrible. I was even worse at chairing a conference than I was at speaking. I had never been trained on speaking. I didn't know how to keep people like on time and keep things like light and moving, and it was a train wreck as far as my speaking ability and chairing ability. But I was just like focused on getting that mastered. Like repetition is the mother of skill, as Tony Robbins likes to say. So I just keep plowing at it until I master it. And I did that. I've spoken, I don't know, 1,000 times in the last 20 some years. And I've gotten really good, but I've also gone through training as well. But just that repetition and keeping at it. And the funny thing about when you get a speaking gig, even if you're terrible at it and you're like on the speaking roster, you're in the brochure, all the different conference organizations poach each other's speakers. So I would start getting calls from conference organizations I'd never heard of, and I just said yes to everything. Right. So I had my calendar full of speaking engagements, even though I was a terrible speaker. It was pretty funny.
But like these two stories are just such a testament to breaks don't, like, I think a lot of people have this delusion or that like a break is going to happen to them. Like you bestowed your break upon yourself. And then despite the fact that you knew you weren't good at something, you learned on the job. Yeah. And I think a lot of people are not willing, maybe not willing, don't understand that's an opportunity.
Yeah. And what I didn't understand in those days, I mean, I had that hustle and the drive and all that, you know, like what Gary Vaynerchuk talks about, or Gary V, you know, it's like, he's all into hustle. I had like copious amounts of hustle. What I didn't have was that kind of, spiritual perspective. I was agnostic until I was like 42 years old. And then I had a spiritual awakening in India on a Tony Robbins Platinum Partner trip. And that changed everything for me. And now I'm coming to the things with a lot more wisdom and a surrender and trust and a belief and that life happens for you, not to you. And it's not like all about the hustle now. It's about allowing, and that we live in a friendly universe and to trust in that. I didn't believe in any of that. I just thought, oh, there's so much darkness and, you know, there's so much evil. And like, that's a lonely, sad existence to believe that everybody's out to get you, or that you have to be on guard 24/7, or that, you know, there's really nothing. It's just emptiness out there. So now I've got this new perspective that I didn't have, and that makes life a lot more joyful and alleviates some of that need to hustle.
Well, and it's so appropriate. This podcast is called Light Hustle because it's all about combining the hard work with the spiritual. And the light, you know, in terms of lightheartedness and humor and all of those things. Because the truth is, with the hustle and the success, if you don't have the joy, who the hell cares? Sure, yeah, you can pay your bills, but who cares? So how long ago was that?
So, well, the spiritual awakening happened in 2012. And then just all the miracles started happening after that. It was incredible, like crazy stuff. First of all, you know, it's a spiritual awakening when it's like an LSD trip. I don't have any experience with LSD or any other drugs, but I, it was an out of this world, kind of out of body experience. I got touched by this oneness monk, and afterwards, and I felt so blissful and connected to the creator. And remember, I was agnostic, practically atheist for my whole life. I felt connected to the creator, like I was suddenly plugged in to the universal Google or something. It was just incredible. And then I walk outside after that, and I see the trees and the grass and everything. And I'm just thinking to myself, wow, this is so beautiful. And the color of the green was just bizarre. It was technicolor, like in a cartoon. I'd never seen stuff glow like that. And I'm just like, wow, I'm like, this is a pivotal moment in my life. I've suddenly discovered my higher power. And the afterwards, the monk explained to me that the divine is an experience, not a belief. So we believe in God, we believe in a higher power or the creator or whatever we want to call it, in the universe, whatever our belief is, it's a belief. But when you experience God, that's a whole other ball game, right? So I got to experience God, and then it changed everything. And then miracle upon miracle, like crazy stuff you'd never, like, that doesn't even compute. That stuff doesn't even happen. It started happening to me.
Okay. So this was in India. You arranged to be touched by this monk.
Tony had brought these monks from Oneness University outside of Chennai to this palace in Udaipur. It's beautiful. They have these little islands in Udaipur, and there are palaces on each one of the islands. So we were at one of these palaces, which is a hotel, very fancy one, and he had arranged for all these monks to come in. And the whole topic or theme for that intensive was oneness. Oneness is like the sugar that you can add to your coffee, your tea, whatever your favorite drink is, whatever your favorite religion is, doesn't matter. It's compatible with oneness. Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity, doesn't matter. Judaism, it all is compatible with oneness. And we got to experience oneness through these dikshas, these oneness blessings. And that one in particular that was from a particular monk who is super high vibration, like, wow, like I got zapped. And that opened a portal or something. It was pretty wild.
And how long did that feeling last?
Well, the feeling was kind of fleeting in that, you know, hour later, I'm kind of back to my new normal. Yeah. But having had that experience, I was a different person. I was completely transformed permanently. It's like they explain that a awakening is a permanent shift in your brain, in your biology. You can't go back to the previous version of your brain anatomy after an awakening.
So what were these miracles? What have these miracles been that followed?
Meeting my wife. So I wrote my relationship vision 2 months later on a poster board at Date with Destiny, another Tony event. And I prayed for my soulmate to show up. As I was writing it, or right after I finished writing it, I prayed for her to show up. I connected to the divine, my divine, and asked for her to show up right away. You get what you ask for. If you say, well, I would really love to have a partner in the next couple of years. Well, okay, you just asked for it to happen in a couple of years. I specifically asked for right away.
Right.
12 hours later, we were mutually introduced. 18 hours after that, we said, I love you to each other. 9 days after that, I proposed to her in a hot air balloon. She did say no. she said, not yet. So, which was, it was all perfect. We were together, inseparable the whole time. And then 9 months later, I re-proposed to her and she said yes, but we were inseparable that whole time. You know, so it's not like it destroyed the relationship that she said no. It's that, it was a little impetuous or impulsive, I guess, to propose and have the ring and everything 9 days after meeting her. But I knew. And the way I knew was because I had learned in India to give these oneness blessings, the dikshas, myself, so I could put my hands on people's heads and zap them too. And at Date with Destiny, there's this evening, the last evening, where everybody gets touched. Or if you're a blessing giver, then you can be the one who's blessing people. So I was doing the dikshas to people while the lights were turned down and the music was playing and so forth. And she hadn't gotten touched. A lot of people don't get touched because it's kind of chaotic and like you're not directed, like, okay, this row has not been addressed yet. Go deal with them. So there's a lot of people get touched more than once. She didn't get touched at all. So I met her. Like I said, she mutually introduced. And she mentioned that she wasn't touched. And within the first 10 minutes of meeting her, I'm like, would you like me to give you a diksha? She said, yeah, I'd love that. That'd be wonderful. Because I knew how to do it.
Right.
When you do this, you are connecting to your higher power. And you are asking for divine grace to pass through you. You are a conduit. And the more you want it for the person that you're praying for, that you're touching, the more divine grace that passes. So I'm praying for her like she's my soulmate. And it was 10 minutes into meeting her. And I knew she's the one.
And how long have you been married, or how long have you been together?
Well, we've been together since December 2012. So that's... six years and a half. We've been married for 2.5 years, and it was a long engagement.
Yeah.
But just did the math. Yeah.
And
we have a baby on the way.
Oh, you do! Congratulations.
Thank you.
And
3 more weeks.
How long?
3 weeks.
By the time you guys hear this, he will be a father yet again.
Yeah.
Now, and we should mention that what her work is in the relationship realm, and doesn't she teach how to find your soulmate?
Yeah, she's a love coach. And before that, she was a life coach. And before that, she was a personal trainer. So she's gotten a lot of training and learnings from Tony Robbins. That's how we met, was at a Tony Robbins event, but she had done Unleash the Power Within. She had crewed Unleash the Power Within. And we've done a lot of events together after. But we do a lot of personal development stuff. We don't do Tony Robbins events anymore, but we're doing other things. So we're seminar junkies. We're mastermind junkies. We're in Genius Network together, for example. She's not going to any meetings right now because she's so pregnant, but she went to several Genius Network meetings earlier this year. It's fun. And
what we haven't even talked about is that you are the leading SEO expert. Can I say that?
I'm not going to correct you, but I wouldn't say that myself because that kind of sounds pretty arrogant. But I do have kind of the Bible on SEO that I co-authored with several other folks. It's called The Art of SEO, and it's 1,000 pages, and it's used as a textbook at universities and published by O'Reilly. It is the go-to book on search engine optimization. If you have a website and you need to get it to the top of Google, that's your book.
And you also have two podcasts.
I have two podcasts. I also have two other books, and you know, I'm kind of a overachiever. I'm prolific with content creation. So the podcast that's all marketing related is called Marketing Speak. But then I have a personal development podcast that was inspired by my journey and all the development stuff that I've done, all the self-help stuff, and it's all biohacking, productivity, spirituality, relationships, all that. It's called Get Yourself Optimized.
And are they both released every week?
Yeah.
Okay, this has been fantastic. We are going to get right now to the lightning round, which just means say the first thing that comes to mind. Don't think about it too much. What is your morning routine?
I connect, do a prayer, a Kabbalah prayer. I'm big into Kabbalah. It's called the Anabakoa prayer, and helps me connect to the Creator and to my certainty and to the bigger picture, you know, to the 99%. The 1% is what's like what we experience. You know, this table is you know, hardwood, but it's not. It's actually mostly space, and you know, you got to connect to what's outside of our normal realm of our senses. And I do that every morning. And that's the main, most important thing that I do. And, you know, I also do a 3 absolutes that I write down in my online journal, or like not online journal, but on the computer. I use Day 1, the Day 1 app, and I put my 3 absolutes down. And I'm probably way over time with that lightning.
It's okay. There's no time. There's no timer. Are 3 absolutes just three things you're going to do that day?
Yes.
It's okay.
Taking a massive to-do list and winnowing it down to like, what are the 3 attainable things that I'm going to do? And not like try to do everything, not try to overwhelm myself. I'll look at the to-do list, but the 3 absolutes are the 3 must-dos.
What is a book that has changed your life?
Wow, there's so many. one of the books that has changed like how I see my purpose in life. Before I had the spiritual awakening epiphany, The Art of Happiness by the Dalai Lama. And the point of the book that I got out of it is that the purpose of life is just to be happy. It's not to create whatever. It's not to save the world. It's not to atone for your sins of past lifetimes. It's just to be happy. So I got a lot out of that.
And what is one of your favorite quotes?
It's from The Art of War by Sun Tzu. Tactics without strategy is the noise before defeat.
Love it. I love it. Now,
I'm all about strategy. And if you're very tactical, you can be a great tactician, you will lose because you're not seeing the bigger picture. You will be slaughtered on the battlefield.
Have you had a mentor? Is it Tony Robbins?
You know, not really. He was more of a coach and a seminar leader. And you don't get much time with Tony directly. Like, you don't get any time. I had very small, limited conversations with him one-on-one, which is almost impossible even to get a minute talking to him. So he was, I wouldn't consider him a mentor. I've had plenty of mentors. And many of them were also coaches. So if I see somebody that I want to learn from and kind of emulate how they are in the world in a particular area, then I will seek them out. And you know, some mentors have been just helpful and not charging me. Some have been very serious investments. It just depends on the situation, but I'll give you one example of somebody who has been a great mentor and coach to me, and that's Ephraim Olszewski. He is a guest on both of my two podcasts. Yeah, I've gotten some incredible insights from him, and you can catch some of those about like things like intentionality and responsibility and so forth from the episodes.
It's Ephraim, like
Ephraim.
Okay. And we've touched on this a lot already, but what is, if you could break it down, what is your spiritual practice?
Yeah. So I'm really big into Kabbalah. I'm also, I really get a lot out of oneness as well, but I've kind of more shifted to, Kabbalah. I take a lot of classes at the Kabbalah Center. So I've taken Kabbalah 1, 2, and 3, and then 1 and 2 over again. And then and with my wife, we go through these classes together. And then we stopped at 3 and got married. And then we didn't end up doing 3 a second time. So these are 10-week courses. Amazing. By the way, I've interviewed 3 of my Kabbalah instructors on the Get Yourself Optimized podcast. So if you're wondering what the heck is this Kabbalah thing, why is Madonna so into it? It's awesome. It's like the most ancient self-help movement. And again, you don't have to be Jewish or anything. It's like a mystical branch of Judaism, but it's like an ancient self-help movement. It's like the sugar you can add to your coffee or tea or whatever. So it doesn't matter what your religious bent is, or if you're not even religious at all, just go for it. At least listen to those episodes. There's so much wisdom and insight from Kabbalah. So I love Kabbalah. Taking practical Kabbalah. That's another class from the Kabbalah Center. And I love it. It's awesome.
What is your best quality?
My best quality. Honesty, I guess. Honesty and transparency and just being real. Like I there's no pretense. Sometimes there is. I mean, we all have ego, but I work really hard on keeping my ego in check. So if somebody wants to hear the real story of how I got from A to B, I will tell them. You know, I'm not gonna sugarcoat it.
And how do you define dark?
Absence of light. And when I say light, I mean like a capital L, like the light of the creator. And if you are revealing light, which is something I do and try to do all the time, I'm thinking about like, how am I going to reveal light in this podcast interview, for example, or when I'm interviewing a guest for my shows, like how am I revealing light in this, or if I'm doing a speech at a conference, how am I revealing light? It's how I gauge my success and what I'm focused on. So if you are focused on the negative, like, oh my God, Trump did this again. And like, oh, what the heck? Or you're like, oh, the environment, it's all just on fire. And like all these species and are just being wiped out. And you focus on the dark and you get more dark. You attract more darkness. You like focus on the darkness in your relationship and you bring in darkness like a magnet to your professional life and to other relationships and so forth. You got to focus on the light. And when you focus on the light, you are a beacon of light to others and people have hope and they get inspired and they change the world. And you don't have to change others. You just have to change yourself. Like Gandhi said, be the change you want to see in the world.
And so then how do you define light? Is it the creator or is it something specific?
I use the definitions that I learned from Kabbalah. There's the light of the creator called the light of wisdom. And then there's the light that we reveal as humans or as souls. And that's not the light of wisdom. That's the light of mercy. So when we're merciful to others, like somebody really deserves to get cut off because they just cut me off, but no, I'm going to let that go. That's the light of mercy.
Well, Stefan, this has been fantastic. You have brought so much light. What is the best way for people to find you?
Yeah, stefanspencer.com is my main website. And my two podcasts are Marketing Speak and Get Yourself Optimized. And each of those have websites. So you can go to getyourselfoptimized.com if you're interested in the spiritual side and the personal development side of what I'm up to. And then the Marketing Speak website is marketingspeak.com. And that's not just SEO, it's Facebook advertising, e-commerce, analytics, paid search, all the stuff that relates to marketing online and even offline.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I will see you next time.
Thank you.